Hello, welcome to the Front Pages. I'm Chris Kelly, and today I'm reading from Monday, January 17th, 2022 editions of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times. Looking at the photographs on the front page of the Times this morning, the largest photograph is very dramatic as we have two lines of hearses coming towards the camera, and in the middle of the two lines are groups of men pushing coffins up the street. This is in the Bronx, where many of the victims were taken to the Islamic Cultural Center for a funeral. There's a small photograph of men in hazmat suits carrying what look like leaf blowers, except they're emitting smoke. And we're told that this is happening in China, where they're disinfecting a shopping mall. And there's a photograph of a stage and theater on Broadway, where the headline tells us attendance continues to fall. Let's start with this story. China lockdown ramps up stress on supply chain. Companies are bracing for another round of potentially debilitating supply chain disruptions as China, home to about a third of global manufacturing, imposes sweeping lockdowns in an attempt to keep the Omicron variant at bay. The measures have already confined tens of millions of people to their homes in several Chinese cities and contributed to a suspension of connecting flights through Hong Kong from much of the world for the next month. At least 20 million people, or about 1.5% of China's population, are in lockdown, mostly in the city of Jinan in western China and in Henan province in the central north. The country's zero-tolerance policy has manufacturers already on the edge from spending the past 2 years dealing with crippling supply chain woes, worried about another round of shutdowns at Chinese factories and ports. Additional disruptions to the global supply chain would come at a particularly fraught moment for companies which are struggling with rising prices for raw materials and shipping, along with extended delivery times and worker shortages. China used lockdowns, contact tracing, and quarantines to halt the spread of the coronavirus nearly 2 years ago after its initial emergence in Wuhan. These tactics have been highly effective, but the extreme transmissibility of the Omicron variant poses the biggest test yet of China's system. So far, the effects of the lockdowns on Chinese factory production and deliveries have been limited. Four of China's largest port cities have imposed narrowly targeted lockdowns to try to control small outbreaks of the Omicron variant. As of this weekend, these cities had not locked down their docks. Still, Volkswagen and Toyota announced last week that they would temporarily suspend operations. Analysts warn that many industries could face disruptions in the flow of goods as China tries to stamp out any coronavirus infections ahead of the Winter Olympics, which will be held in Beijing next month. On Saturday, Beijing officials reported the city's first case of the Omicron variant, prompting the authorities to lock down the infected person's residential compound and workplace. If extensive lockdowns become more widespread in China, their effects on supply chains could be felt across the United States. Major new disruptions could depress consumer confidence and exacerbate inflation, which is already at a 40-year high, posing challenges for the Biden administration and the Federal Reserve. The potential for setbacks comes just as many companies had hoped. They were about to see some easing of the bottlenecks that have clogged global supply chains since the pandemic began. The combination of intermittent shutdowns at factories, ports, and warehouses around the world, and American consumers' surging demand for foreign goods, has thrown the global delivery system out of whack. Transportation costs have skyrocketed, and ports and warehouses have experienced pileups of products waiting to be shipped or driven elsewhere, while other parts of the supply chain are stymied by shortages. For the 2021 holiday season, customers largely circumvented these challenges by ordering early. High shipping prices began to ease after the holiday rush, and some analysts speculated that next month's Lunar New Year, when many Chinese factories will be idle, might be a moment for ports, warehouses, and trucking companies to catch up on moving backlogged orders and allow global supply chains to return to normal. But the spread of the Omicron variant is foiling hopes for a fast recovery, highlighting not only how much America depends on Chinese goods, but also how fragile the supply chain remains within the United States. American trucking companies and warehouses already short of workers, are losing more of their employees to sickness and quarantines. Weather disruptions are leading to empty shelves in American supermarkets. Delivery times for products shipped from Chinese factories to the West Coast of the United States are as long as ever, stretching to a record high of 113 days in early January, according to Flexport, a logistics firm. That was up from fewer than 50 days at the beginning of 2019. The Biden administration has undertaken a series of moves to try to alleviate bottlenecks both in the United States and abroad, including devoting $17 billion to improving American ports as part of a new infrastructure law. Major U.S. ports are handling more cargo than ever before and working through their backlog of containers, in part because ports have threatened additional fees for containers that sit too long in their yards. Yet those greater efficiencies have been undercut by continuing problems at other stages of the supply chain, including a shortage of truckers and warehouse workers to move the goods to their final destination. A push to make the Port of Los Angeles operate 24/7, which was the centerpiece of the Biden administration's efforts to address supply chain issues this fall, has still seen few trucks showing up for overnight pickups, according to port officials, and cargo ships are still waiting for weeks outside West Coast ports for their turn for a berth to dock in. West Coast ports could see further disruptions this year as they renegotiate a labor contract for more than 22,000 dock workers that expires on July 1. Previous negotiations led to work slowdowns and shipping delays. Chris Netram, the managing vice president for tax and domestic economic policy at the National Association of Manufacturers, which represents 14,000 companies, said that American businesses had seen a succession of supply chain problems since the beginning of the pandemic. Right now, we are all at the tail end of one flavor of those challenges, the port snarls, he said, adding that Chinese lockdowns could be the next flavor of this. Manufacturers are watching carefully to see whether more factories and ports in China might be forced to shutter if Omicron spreads in the coming weeks. Neither Xi'an or Henan province, the site of China's most expansive lockdowns, has an economy heavily reliant on exports, although Xi'an does produce some semiconductors, including for Samsung and Micron Technology, as well as commercial aircraft components. Chinese authorities are experimenting with more narrowly targeted lockdowns. One example is in Shanghai, which announced on Thursday that it had identified five COVID cases at a milk tea shop that had been visited by a Chinese student who had recently returned from the United States. Rather than lock down the entire city or neighborhood, the government put emergency restrictions on the shop itself. DeSantis lurks, Trump stews, and GOP faces loyalty test. For months, former President Donald Trump has been grumbling quietly to friends and visitors to his Palm Beach mansion about a rival Republican power center in another Florida mansion some 400 miles to the north. Governor Ron DeSantis, a man Mr. Trump believes he put on the map, has been acting far less like an acolyte and more like a future competitor, Mr. Trump complains. With his stock rising fast in the party, the governor has conspicuously refrained from saying he would stand aside if Mr. Trump runs for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. The magic words, Trump said to several associates and advisors. That long stewing resentment burst into public view recently in a dispute over a seemingly unrelated topic, COVID policies. After Mr. DeSantis refused to reveal his full COVID vaccination history, the former president publicly acknowledged that he received a booster. Last week, he seemed to swipe at DeSantis by blasting his gutless politicians who dodged the question out of fear of blowback from vaccine skeptics. Mr. DeSantis shot back on Friday, criticizing Mr. Trump's early handling of the pandemic and saying he regretted not being more vocal in his complaints. The back and forth exposed how far Republicans have shifted to the right on coronavirus politics. The doubts Mr. Trump amplified about public health expertise have only spiraled since he left office. Now his defense of the vaccines, even if often subdued and almost always with the caveat in the same breath that he opposes mandates, has put him uncharacteristically out of step with the hardline elements of his party's base and provided an opening for a rival. But that it was Mr. DeSantis, a once loyal member of the Trump court, wielding a knife made the tension that about much more. At its core, the dispute amounts to a stand-in for the broader challenge confronting Republicans at the outset of midterm elections. They are led by a defeated former president who demands total fealty, brooks no criticism, and is determined to sniff out and then snuff out any threat to his control of the party. That includes the 43-year-old DeSantis, who has told friends he believes Mr. Trump's expectation that he bend the knee is asking too much. That refusal has set up a generational clash and a test of loyalty in the de facto capital of today's GOP, one watched by Republicans elsewhere who have ridden to power on Mr. Trump's coattails. Already, party figures are attempting to calm matters. Mr. Trump's aides have also tried to tamp down questions about the former president's frustrations so as to not elevate Mr. DeSantis. Still, Mr. Trump has made no secret of his preparations for a third run for the White House. And while Mr. DeSantis, who is up for re-election this year, has not declared his plans, he is widely believed to be eyeing the presidency. Mr. Trump and his aides are mindful of Republicans' increasingly public fatigue with the drama that trails Mr. Trump, the former president's false claims about fraud in the 2020 election, which Mr. DeSantis has not challenged, and his role in the recent events leading to the January 6 riot at the Capitol have some Republicans looking for a fresh start. Mr. DeSantis is often the first name Republicans cite as a possible Trump-style contender, not named Trump. DeSantis would be a formidable 2024 candidate in the Trump lane should Trump not run, said Dan Eberhardt, a Republican donor. He's Trump, but a little smarter, more disciplined, and brusque without being too brusque. Notably, Mr. Trump, a longtime student of charisma and mass appeal, as well as an avid reader of polling, has refrained from publicly attacking Mr. DeSantis, who is a distant but potent second to him in the polls on the 2024 GOP field. His restraint is a break from the mockery and bullying he often uses to attack Republicans he perceives as vulnerable. Mr. Trump made no references to the governor at a rally in Arizona on Saturday. Mr. DeSantis has $70 million in the bank for his reelection, a war chest he stocked with help from the Republican rank and file and donor class alike. He has raised his profile in the same spaces Mr. Trump once dominated. The governor is ubiquitous on Fox News, where he is routinely met with the sort of softballs that once arced toward Mr. Trump. And he frequently mixes with the well-tanned Republican donor community near the former president's winter home in South Florida. Still on the front page, Texas synagogue hostage taker flew from UK, authorities say. Just before New Year's, a 44-year-old man from an industrial city in the north of England landed at Kennedy International Airport. On his travel documents, he listed his destination as a hotel on Queens Boulevard. His arrival raised no red flags. 2 weeks later, without explanation, he entered a service at a synagogue in suburban Fort Worth, Texas, some 1,600 miles from Queens, and some 4,800 miles from his home. Thus began an 11-hour ordeal on Saturday that was partly live-streamed, captured the nation's attention, and ended dramatically in a flurry of flashes and gunfire that left him dead and four people he had held captive unharmed and thankful for their lives. On Sunday, the authorities identified the man as Malik Faisal Akram, a British citizen. What drew him to Texas was still a mystery, though a tantalizing clue emerged as investigators reviewed the ranting demands he made as he held captive the rabbi and three other members of the synagogue. President Biden on Sunday called the hostage-taking an act of terror, and British authorities confirmed on Sunday that counterterrorism police were involved in their investigation. Late on Sunday, the Greater Manchester Police Department in England announced that it had detained two teenagers for questioning in connection with the investigation. The department did not say who they were or why they were being questioned. Mr. Akram was originally from the Blackburn area of Lancashire, northwest England village, the British authorities said. Mr. Akram had entered the United States legally, according to two U.S. officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity. The address Mr. Akram used on his entry papers appears to be the same as the Queens Hotel in New York City. Inexpensive by New York standards, the rooms costing around $80 per night, the hotel overlooks an entrance to the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway and is described on Google Maps as unassuming lodging. Though Mr. Akram said on his entry documents that he would be staying there, it was not clear whether he actually did. A clerk on duty there on Sunday could not say. FBI agents came to review the hotel's camera recordings but found nothing useful, the clerk said. And this story comes from the page that the last one was continued on. Stay put urged as storm cripples south and heads to northeast. A strong winter storm that coated highways in the Carolinas and Georgia with ice and knocked power out of nearly 200,000 customers was headed on Sunday to the northeast, where it was expected to leave about a foot of snow in some places. In the south, where some governors declared states of emergency, areas such as central Mississippi and central North Carolina had already received more than 9 inches of snow, while portions of central South Carolina had up to a half inch of ice, the National Weather Service said. The storm is going to be pretty significant in terms of generating travel impacts, outages, and things of that nature, said Rich Otto, a meteorologist with the Weather Service. Officials in the Northeast urged people to stay off the roads on Sunday night, warning that the storm was expected to bring up to a foot of snow in some parts, including the Appalachians and upstate New York, and nearly 2 feet in northwestern Pennsylvania. Meteorologists said that in parts of the Northeast, the snow could fall at a rate of 3 inches per hour on Sunday evening. By Sunday evening, the Washington area had already recorded some snow, and more was on the way, with totals up to 4 inches possible. Parts of upstate New York, including Buffalo, were under a winter storm warning, with the potential for snowfall amounts up to 20 inches and, quote, significant blowing and drifting. Overnight is going to be very predictable, unpredictable, make that, said Governor Kathy Hochul of New York. And with the darkness and ice on the roads and very high winds, this could be a very dangerous situation. As attendance falls, now is the winter of Broadway's discontent. The reopening of Broadway last summer, following the longest shutdown in history, provided a jolt of energy to a city ready for a rebound. Bruce Springsteen and block parties, eager audiences, and enthusiastic actors. But the Omicron variant that has barreled into the city, sending coronavirus counts soaring, has now battered Broadway, leaving the industry facing an unexpected and enormous setback on its road back from the pandemic. In December, so many theater workers tested positive for the coronavirus that on some nights, half of all shows were canceled in a few troublesome instances after audiences were already in their seats. Now, producers have figured out how to keep shows running, thanks mainly to a small army of replacement workers filling in for infected colleagues. Heroic stories abound. When the two girls who alternate as the young lioness and Nala in The Lion King were both out one night, a 10-year-old boy who usually plays the cub Simba went on in the role, saving the performance. But there's a new problem. Audiences are vanishing. During the week that ended January 9, just 62% of seats were occupied. That's the lowest attendance has been since a week in 2003 when musicians went on strike. And it's a precipitous drop from the January before the pandemic when 94% of seats were filled during the first week after the holidays. The casualty list is growing. Over the last month, 9 shows have decided to close their doors, at least temporarily. To Kill a Mockingbird, a huge hit before the pandemic, announced that last week that it would close until June. On Sunday, Ain't Too Proud, a successful jukebox musical about the Temptations, closed for good. Box office grosses are falling off the cliff. The all-important Christmas and New Year's weeks, which producers count on each year to fatten their coffers in anticipation of the lean weeks that follow, generated just $40 million this season, down from $99 million before the pandemic. Requests for ticket refunds are now so high that on some days, some shows have negative wraps, meaning they're giving back more money than they're taking in. Over the long run, industry leaders say there is every reason to remain bullish about Broadway. Until the pandemic, the industry had been enjoying a sustained boom, fueled by a rebound in the popularity of musicals and by New York's gargantuan growth as a tourist destination. This downturn might not last long. There is some evidence that the Omicron surge may be peaking, at least in some parts of the country, including New York.